Radio Prague News.
The Czech Constitutional Court has given homosexual couples the right to adopt children. The Czech Republic is not demanding the resignation of the European Commission president, says the Prime Minister. And Segway operators may sue if the vehicles are banned in Prague. Homosexual couples in the Czech Republic have the right to adopt children, according to a ruling issued on Tuesday by the Constitutional Court in Brno. The court's justices overturned a provision in the law on registered partnerships barring such adoptions, which they said was discriminatory. The civic code only allows married couples to conduct joint adoptions, so only one member of a pair in a registered partnership will be the adoptive parent under the new ruling. There are around 1,800 registered partnerships in the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic is not demanding the resignation of European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, says the country's Prime Minister, Bohuslav Sobotka. Mr. Sobotka made the comment in Brussels on Tuesday ahead of a meeting of EU leaders to discuss the UK's plans to quit the bloc. On Sunday, the Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Lubomír Zaorálek, indirectly called for Mr. Juncker to step down over his responsibility for the UK's Brexit vote. But Mr. Sobotka said it was not about one person. Rather, the European Commission needs to change how it operates as an institution. Czech and Dutch police have arrested 58 people in connection with the large-scale production and distribution of illegal drugs, police spokespersons in both states announced on Tuesday. Coordinated raids uncovered 6 laboratories, 8 cannabis factories, 32 kilos of synthetic drugs, 54 kilos of marijuana, and a host of other illicit materials. Police said they had been monitoring the gang, which was also active in other countries, for 3 years. Czech arms manufacturers increased their exports last year to 15 billion crowns, according to figures released on Tuesday by the head of the Defence and Security Industry Association of the Czech Republic, Jiří Hynek. In 2014, the industry's exports totaled 11.8 billion crowns. Mr. Hynek attributed the jump to a marked increase in sales to the US and the EU. Czech arms makers export 90% of their products. Segway operators in Prague are considering legal action if the city's authorities go ahead with a planned ban on the two-wheeled electric vehicles. A spokesperson for the Segway Association of the Czech Republic, which comprises 25 operators, said it would sue the city for losses incurred. From mid-August, Segways should be barred from city centre pavements, cycle paths and pedestrian zones, where they have become a familiar sight in recent years. A new exhibition in Prague is said to display previously unseen pictures of St. Vitus Cathedral by the great Czech photographer Josef Sudek. While Sudek's photos of the cathedral taken in the 1920s during construction are well known, the works on show date from the Nazi occupation of the city. The exhibition In the Shadows of the Cathedral runs from Wednesday until the 30th of August. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, lawmakers get fired up again over no smoking laws, art activists work out how to raise cash with a special flag sale, and later we speak to a Czech made good in Canada who didn't forget his homeland. All that coming up, so please stay with us. New anti-smoking legislation, risen from the ashes of a similar bill recently, is to be debated in the lower house on Tuesday. At stake is a full ban in restaurants. The government is hoping this time the bill gets the necessary support, not least from coalition MPs. Jan Vellinger has the details.
The Czech Republic is one of the last holdouts in Europe when it comes to enacting comprehensive anti-smoking legislation. Over the years, the successful adoption of a smoking ban has seemed like a pipe dream. All too often, too little political will or political will gradually diluted in the legislative process has led to negative outcomes. In a memorable moment in the lower house last year, aiming to put the country on the right track in terms of smoking, Health Minister Svatopluk Němeček brought an urn to the podium to stress the need for a ban. This to prevent needless deaths from secondhand smoke. But even then, that bill failed. The government is now taking a second crack at it in the hopes that this time the legislation will pass and no crisis will flare up again. The head of the Social Democrats Deputies Club, Roman Sklenák.
We have 2 weeks until the summer break, and during that period we will call a new session, and I'm confident we can get the legislation through a first reading and that it can be passed quickly after the holidays so that senators will also have enough time to back it as well by the end of the year.
By estimates, it would be possible for the Senate to pass the proposal in October, which would leave restaurant owners some 2 months to take appropriate steps. For example, the bill could continue to allow smoking, for example, in restaurant gardens outside. Roman Sklenák's counterpart in the fellow coalition party ANO, Jaroslav Faltýnek, agrees that if possible, the bill should be passed by the end of the year. Others, such as Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek, made clear that success this time is crucial.
We have highlighted priority legislation, which is very important for us, where we want to do everything to make sure it's passed. The anti-smoking bill is exactly that. It failed once, but we want to get it back in the game and passed.
As before, opponents of a strict smoking ban, such as MP Marek Benda of the Civic Democrats, have already signaled they plan to rock the boat. The last time around, Mr. Benda pushed for restaurants to be allowed a special room on the premises where customers could go just to light up. Already, he has made clear that if he can, he will again throw a wrench in the works.
The government failed to respect the will of the lower house, so I plan, so to speak, to complicate matters for them.
And still others charge that restaurant owners themselves should be given the freedom to decide on their own whether to allow smoking or to be smoke-free.
Jan Willinger there with that still smoking story. Last year, the guerrilla art group Stohoven made headlines all over the world after they took down the presidential standard on top of Prague Castle and replaced it with a giant pair of red underpants in protest against the president's policies. Now, more than 6 months later, there is a follow-up to the prank. The art activists have cut up the presidential flag into 1,152 pieces and handed them out at random to people in cities and towns across the Czech Republic. Ruth Frankova reports.
Many have wondered in the months that followed the prank at Prague Castle what actually happened with the presidential standard, which allegedly got lost in the process. This week, just a few days ahead of the trial in which the Stohoven members face charges of disorderly conduct, theft and damage, we finally have the answer to the mystery. The flag has been cut into over 1,000 pieces and handed out to citizens. The incident has raised immediate reaction from the president's spokesman Jiří Ovčáček, who said the latest move is a dirty trick and likened the art group to the Nazis who were the first to desecrate the Czechoslovak presidential standard. I asked the spokesman for the Stohoven group, Petr Žilka, to outline the reason behind the project called decentralizing of power.
We think that there is big centralization tendencies on the top political level. There are lots of new legislation that really increases control of state above each inhibition. And we consider it to be very dangerous tendency. So we try to, let's say, make people think about what their personal political power is and how they should treat with that. Maybe to go once per year to elections is not enough. Maybe we should take our power back and not to leave it up to politicians, because they seem to be very dangerous.
According to Mr. Zilka, the group is trying to motivate people not to let the state have so much control over their lives. According to him, people should start by better protecting their personal freedoms and rights, preventing the state from collecting their personal data. And why exactly was the presidential flag, which Zilka claims was really the one stolen from top of Prague Castle, cut into 1,125 pieces?
If we shall be very strict about this, then there would have to be 10 million pieces, as there are 10 million inhabitants in Czech Republic, but it was physically not possible. So we just choose the symbolic size of each piece, and this is just random number. The value together is 35,000 crowns, which is approximately the value of the standard that the police stated is the damage that we caused by stealing this flag. So we symbolically give this amount back to the people, to the taxpayers who paid for it as a remedy.
The trial with the three members of the Stohoven group who hoisted the giant pair of red underpants at Prague Castle goes to court this Wednesday.
Ruud Frankova reporting there. Now it's time for our regular feature, and we stay with Ruud, who speaks to Milan Kropa, a man who left for Canada in the 1960s, cleaned up, and now has been honoured by his homeland.
One of the recipients of this year's Gratias Agit Awards, handed out by the Foreign Ministry to those promoting a good name of the Czech Republic abroad, was Milan Kropa, a Czech-born businessman living in Canada. Mr. Kropa left Czechoslovakia in the 1960s, and after making his way to Canada, he established his own cleaning company, which is currently offering services in all of the country's provinces. Besides that, Mr. Kropa supports a number of activities by Czech compatriots organizations and is one of the main sponsors of the Czech Studies Funds, providing exchange programs for Czech students. I met with Milan Kropa when he came to Prague for the Gratias Agit Awards ceremony to talk about his life and experiences in Canada, but I first asked him about his childhood in Czechoslovakia.
I was born in a flour mill, in my father's flour mill, and grew up in there. When I was about 6 years old, my father was put in jail, and he came home when I was 18. So he spent 12 years in jail as a political prisoner. During that time, while my father was away, I really didn't know him much. I used to see him only once a year. That was allowed. During the time that I was growing up, it was strictly up to my mom. And I have to say that all the time, I never felt that we would be short of something. My mom was doing an outstanding job. She was working with bricklayers as a helper. When my dad came home, then she stopped working, and my dad was working in a brick factory.
And what about the property? What about your mill? Was that confiscated?
That was confiscated in 1948. Shortly before they put my father in jail. And I remember one story there, which is very interesting. As I said, I was 6 years old, and my father was telling me, okay, today is the day. Today we have to give them the keys, and the mill is not ours anymore. Won't belong to us. And I objected by telling my dad, Dad, you promised me that mill. That is my mill, so you can't give it to anybody else. And I said, you know what then? Take the keys and throw them in the pond. So I was, I think it was pretty tough for my dad as well.
I know that you used to play football actively as a child. Did that help you to overcome some of the difficult situations that you faced during that time?
Of course, sport is a very good cure for any problems you might find yourself in. It was very exciting. It was a great preparation for my life in Canada later on in business, because what is very interesting is that in, let's say, football, or we call it soccer up there, there are rules. Everybody, without any question, obeys these rules. There is a certain honesty there that you have to learn. Certain things are below your dignity to do. Same thing in business. And I always, whatever I've done, always kept in mind certain dignity, honesty, no cheating, So that was very important, and that was sport. I took it from sport.
Unfortunately, you were not allowed to study in Czechoslovakia because of your father being a political prisoner. Did you always have in mind that you wanted to emigrate eventually?
Yeah, well, it all started when my father came home. Before that, I felt I was doing okay, and I was content with living here. When my dad came home, then he started working on me, and you had to learn another language. That was his first. Then he told me that soccer is not forever, that it's only temporary, and I should plan long term, not temporary stuff. And I did tell him that I really like it, and there's lots of fame that comes with it. And so he was very upset and told me that if I am a fame chaser, my head is empty and that I'm naive and that I should concentrate on something different, that I should kind of store from situations that I was going to go through. It's like a bank. And later on, when you can't play soccer and so on, you will use that information to be productive.
So in 1966, yes. you left Czechoslovakia.
First stop was in Paris. Mm-hmm. And from Paris, I went to Austria, where I met my fiancé, where we got married. And then my son was born there. At that time, the Canadian embassy was pretty strict in choosing immigrants. So we had to wait for my son to be 3 months and to make sure that he's healthy. And then we were allowed to immigrate.
And you always had a plan of going to Canada.
This is also an interesting story. I was in Germany, in Bayreuth, in a police station, just to see how is it with asylum. And they were asking me questions, and I was explaining in German about my father's ventures and businesses. And then I got to the sawmill, and I ran out of words. So the one of the policemen sitting there, listening, in perfect Czech, he said, okay, tell me, I'll translate it to them. And that gentleman stayed with me after the others left. And he told me, he said, what's your plan? What are you going to do? So I told him that I would like to stay in Germany, of course. I speak German. And he says, don't stay here. I wouldn't recommend it. You can live here for 50 years and we will not accept you. And if I can advise you, there are three countries, USA, Australia, and Canada. And he said, and according to my knowledge, Canada is a paradise. So that got stuck in my head. And then when we ended up in Treiskirchen in Austria, and so I started talking to the Canadians. And then, of course, the most important decision that a person can make, I made it based on hockey. I wanted to see NHL. So today, of course, you can laugh at it, but it was very, very important to me so that I could watch hockey on TV, real hockey.
So what was it like arriving in Canada? Did you know any English by then?
No. I had no English at all, not even good morning. But Canada was fantastic. We received all the clothing, all the transportation, all the food was paid. And actually, I was getting more money from the government. Then after 5 months, I decided, okay, I got to find a job because I could communicate already. So I thought, now is the time. I'm going to find myself a job and I'm going to make my first few million. You know, very naive.
But it didn't last that long. You came in 1968 and it was in 1977, I believe, that you established your company.
Yes.
How did you get into the cleaning business?
What happened when I was looking for a job, I realized that I'm going to make less than what the government was paying me. I had no other way out of this situation. First, I went to my teacher and I told him, I said, you know, the Canadians, the Canadian government, they're crazy. They're nuts. You know how many thousands of us is here in Canada and they're getting all this money? The country will go into bankruptcy because nobody can do that. So he looked at me and he kind of smiled. He says, don't worry. That's a good investment. You'll pay back. And yes, every April, when we have a tax deductions and so on, Yeah, then I remember him. So when this happened, I had no other choice than look for a part-time job. And as a part-time, I found cleaning of offices at night. So for a while, I was working during the day, and then at night, I went to clean offices. Then I was looking for the job myself and getting business. Started a company, a little company. So it took a while, but I was very lucky that during that period of time, from the 68 to 77, I went through a lot of different experiences, learning experiences that were phenomenal. And then, of course, 77, I was ready.
And now you are actually employing around 4,000 people.
Yes, the company grew, the cleaning company grew. It will be over 4,000 now, because before I came here, we got another 120 stores in Quebec. Quebec is a tough one. That's a tough region to do business.
How important was it for you, especially at the beginning, to be in touch with the Czech expatriate community in Canada?
To be honest, when I got to Canada, I was in contact, yes, with a few Czechs. But it was more kind of a mental help from them. Also, there was a football soccer club called Sparta Toronto. So I spent there 2 years playing with them. And then, of course, my wife was instrumental in telling me, listen, this is a real stuff here. This is not a game. You better concentrate on something a little more serious. And so the contact with the Czech community was limited because I needed help more than anybody else. And then shortly after I really started my own business, then I was so busy that I could not be part of any activity. I was strictly 24/7, just concentrating on the business. And I have to say, my tremendous luck was that work, and it still is today, is my hobby. It's fun. So it's much easier to work under those conditions.
But you are nowadays helping others. You are helping the Czech community and supporting some of their projects.
Yes, because I do feel that when somebody is really lucky, the way I was, and has the ability to make enough money, there's a responsibility that comes with it. And the responsibility is, I didn't do it just by myself. There was lots of help, lots of other people that work with me. So I think I owe to the society. So that's what I'm doing, yes. I also support Czech students from university that go to U of T, University of Toronto. It's a certain amount that is paid to the U of T, and then they bring people from here to study.
Are you in contact with your relatives in the Czech Republic, and do you actually visit the Czech Republic regularly?
Yeah, about 4 times per year, sometimes more. It depends on how busy I'm up there. Right now, the only reason I came was for the award, and quickly back, because we are in development of the airport.
We haven't had time to mention this, but I don't know how recently it is you acquired a former military airport.
Yes, that's right. And again, the plan was not to build a normal airport, functional. No, I wanted to have my own runway and my own hangar. But when I built my hangar, people started coming and asking me, hey, can you store my plane? And that's when the idea came. So I said, oh, well, great. So we will build hangars, and that's how to make money there. That's exactly what happens. And so far, we have about 100, 120 airplanes there. There's a mechanic. It became quite a business.
Milan Kropa ending that feature by Ruth Frankova. If you've any comments, good or bad, about today's programme, then please send them to us. Hopefully they're good. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely glad to hear from you. But from me, Chris Johnston, goodbye. Thanks very much.